October 2008. It was a beautiful day on the white sand beach of Turks and Caicos. Ethan and I had just landed at the Regent Palms for our honeymoon. I stared at the turquoise water that seemed to never end and put the lavender-infused ice towel handed to me by hotel staff on my forehead and took a deep breath. It was a dream come true. We just got married days before after being together for 3 incredible years. Life could only get better. September 2009, I was sitting at the food court chair at College Park near the subway, having a coffee with a friend. It was a rare moment for me to be without my newborn son, Blake. I was slightly anxious and also quite relieved not to hear his cry for a few minutes. Blake was colic, and Ethan and I were exhausted, completely lost, not knowing if we were doing things right or wrong. "I can't wait to have a baby," my friend sitting opposite to me gushed about motherhood. I didn't hold back. "It is hard, you know." "How are you with Ethan?" she asked all of a sudden. I paused for a long while looking outside the window, then said, "I miss him so much." 2015 or something like that. Month unknown, day unknown, we were in Scarlett's bedroom, irritated with each other for reasons I don't even remember. One of us was holding Scarlett, Blake was occupied by his Lego in the room next door. It eventually escalated to a loud argument. And Ethan, who was usually mild, laid back in communication, became angry. "I can never do anything right. There is no break for me to catch. You complain all the time. You're so miserable to be around." I stared at him back in shock.
Hello, and welcome to Parents Uninterrupted. My name is Ethan.
I'm Rose.
And this is our fourth podcast, just in time for Valentine's Day, and today we're talking about relationships. Now, earlier you just heard Rose paint 3 different pictures about points in time within our relationship. As you might have noticed, the difference is that we had kids in the second and the third picture. But for the record, the last one that Rose had mentioned, after her initial shock, she ended up giving me a hug.
I did. At that moment, by you telling me how you truly felt, it was a bit of a rude awakening for me. I could truly feel your pain. I think we can all agree, honey, that it was a really tough period of time for us and for our relationship. And that's why we want to have this really candid conversation. And we want to talk about how having kids really, truly affected our relationship and affected our marriage. Just for the record, again, we're no marriage experts. We're not counselors or anything, but we are not. We're just sharing our learnings and observations and our experiences with the audience. So let's start talking about how we transitioned from a couple to parents. I think when the first baby arrives, it really changes the dynamic of a couple's relationship. And basically, we went from lovers to a team.
Go team! High five!
Okay, that was so random. Okay, so the first challenge we had that I found, if you listen to the second story that I read out, where I was sitting in College Park having coffee with a friend, and where I mentioned I really missed him. It seems odd that we spent so much time together, but I really missed him. So that's really the challenge of lack of quality time with each other. I think it's interesting how when the baby arrives in your life and there's so much to do and your day is filled with chores and tasks just to keep the baby healthy and alive, that you are working as a team, but you have very little quality time to spend with each other.
Yep, that is right.
So to overcome that, I think it would be helpful to adjust the expectations of what you would expect from the spouse. I remember I was so naive when I was pregnant with Blake. I would tear out these Vogue fashion shoot pages of these fancy women in their stiletto heels and dressed in designer wear and pushing a stroller and looking like they still had everything together, and they were still very appealing, like very attractive. And I would tear them out and I would show Ethan to say, you know what, who says your life has to stop when you have a baby and this is how I'm gonna be? And I could not be more opposite of that when I had Blake.
Yeah, I thought that was actually some odd art project that you were working on, but apparently it wasn't.
So having a baby is really hard, and depends on how your baby is. You're truly a different person. I think having that expectation really helps. And thankfully, I think Ethan adjusted really quickly, and he did not expect me to look a certain way and to be a certain way. And I was very appreciative of how caring and loving he was as a father and how he shared a lot of the baby caring duties with me. So I think what would be helpful for a couple during this period of time is not to expect each other to be the old self, but rather see each other in a different light, appreciate how loving, caring, how different they can be. And now you see that incredibly nurturing side of your spouse, which is also very inspiring. But I do want to talk about how the moms, or the moms who after giving birth were the main caretaker of the baby, feels during that time. I think this is a very delicate time after giving birth, and the baby's sole full-time caretaker just feels so vulnerable during this time. And the other partner, it can be a mom, it can be dad, it's whoever is still going to work or managed to have part of your life stay the same intact. It's an important time for the other partner to really care about how the moms feel and what you can do to help them feel better.
Yeah, so the reality is the spouse that goes to work, you actually have that bit of an escape. So you go to work, you escape a little bit from the challenges of raising a new baby, of all of the countless hours of feeding and taking care of them, and you bring a little bit of normalcy back into your day. And to be honest, when you go to the office, you actually feel really good because people actually approach you to say, hey, congratulations on the new baby. You look great. How are you doing it? So it actually kind of feeds your own image of making yourself feel really good, feeling like empowered, feeling like you can do what you can, and that you are doing what you can, and you're being recognized for it. You can also have that luxury of going for walks with coworkers, grabbing a coffee, even grabbing lunch, and really escaping from the challenges at home and getting a bit of a break. But the reality is you've got to think about how you're going to actually help your spouse who's at home taking care of your child. And you really have to ask yourself, so what are you willing to sacrifice or give up in order to make sure that you both work well and function together as a team? So, I mean, that could be things such as like skipping drinks after dinner, not going out to these social events that you're used to. But that's a sacrifice that you're going to have to make in order for yourself to be able to support your spouse at home. I know, like, making sure I was home at like 4 or 5 was really important to Rose, because that allowed her to have her own time off away from Blake and really focus on herself to make herself feel better, whether it be taking a nap, be it even taking a shower, but it's her own time. And I would also encourage this because women have a great memory and they'll remember everything during this moment and they'll remind you forever. So make sure you really help out and don't screw up.
I do think this something is different now is we're in the middle of the pandemic. So I think a lot of the parents who've just given birth now have the luxury of having the other parent around during this pandemic and helping them out. So this may not seem to be an issue for a lot of couples at this moment of time. However, we still have a lot of couples where the partner is an essential worker, still going to work and leaving the house. And also the pandemic won't last forever. So you will be in a state where I think one person potentially could stay at home during parental leave and the other person goes to work. So it's just something to keep in mind. I think it's so easy when you're surrounded in your social circle, either by colleagues or people who you actually enjoy the company of, it's so easy to just say yes to another hour of sitting in a restaurant, having a drink, say yes to staying late in the office sometimes, just working on the project a little bit later. But for the partner who's staying home full time with the baby, it could mean the difference between almost having a mental breakdown because the baby can't stop crying to being able to take a shower and now reset and bring yourself back to that healthy state. It makes a huge difference. So I do think that the couples really have to evaluate what worked for them and find the best balance. But it is very important to keep the mental health and the feeling of the person who is taking the majority of the baby caring duty in mind. The other thing I want to kind of mention is women, especially after giving birth and their bodies change so much, they feel very insecure. Not everybody. I'm speaking for myself. I'm just sharing a very honest piece about myself. Right after I gave birth, I did feel like I was stuck in these, like, you know, sweats, and my body didn't feel like mine. It felt like it belonged to the baby, and I wasn't really myself. And I wouldn't say it to Ethan, and I wouldn't display that, but when he did go to work and I kind of wondered, oh, now, you know, he's finally leaving this like sweaty mess of a wife at home and going to the office and the towers, and he's going to sit in meetings with very attractive women in their best working gear and talking about things intelligent instead of how to feed the baby and did the baby have a bowel movement today or something like that. So I was very insecure. But luckily, I think Ethan did a really good job to reassure me that I was still attractive in my own way, and, you know, I had really nothing to worry about. So he constantly validated and to help me feel positive about myself. And I think that is really the job of the other partner, just because of the stuff that you have to go through. So please take the time to make your wife, your partner, your spouse, to make the person who stays home with the baby feel good about themselves. So fast forward, after the transition to parenthood, you're probably getting a hang of things, and just when you know, you think you know what you're doing, a lot of times many of us choose, or sometimes by accident, have more than one child. So the next one's coming. And Ethan and I, we have two kids, so which was not too bad, but you probably have heard many people say the phrase, having two kids is not times two the work. A lot of times it's
like times 100. It's crazy.
Well, the multiplier is a little bit bigger because it really changes the routine, the dynamic. And we only have two. We have many friends who have three kids or four kids, and it's definitely no easy feat to manage. And one big challenge that we found is when you have multiple kids, there are just so many chores. The dishes never end, the laundry never ends, the activities never end, the crying never ends. It seems like when you have taken care of one thing, another pops up and you just keep on going. It's just like go, go, go all the time.
And for some reason, there's always food on the floor. I'm always stepping on something, whether it's Cheerios, whether it's like, I don't know, 3-day-old food. It's just everywhere.
Yeah, it's. I think that's one biggest complaints parents have is the chores around the house. Even when you have help, like if you have periodic cleaning ladies coming in, fantastic. But the cleaning lady is not there every day. And on an everyday basis, you're still going to have a lot to do. When it comes to this, I have a very strong opinion about this, because I think Ethan and I have, over the years, not without friction, but we have eventually found our groove to see what's the right percentage share of the household chores that we each have. So we are in a system that is fairly balanced, and I would say right around 50-50, sometimes 60-40, but you know, it's more of an even split. But I know for many other couples, it can be very different because of the unique circumstances that they're in, be it work or anything else. What I do want to say is that I have never found, so this is something that is more of an observation versus an experience, that out of all the couples that we know and we've talked to, I have never found a couple where one person does all the housework, or a majority, I would say over 90%. Even voluntarily, even agreed upon because of work schedule and such, that makes one person be the sole house chore person, I have never found a happy couple in that situation. So what I mean is, even if it's a voluntary agreement, I find the person who does most of the chores complain all the time, and it's just not in a happy situation. So what I want to say is, sometimes that is the only system that will work based on the work schedule. But when the two partners are willing to share the house chores and not giving all these mundane, boring tasks to one person to do, and it never ends, trust me, really never ends when you have multiple children. And if the other person is willing at least to offer, or when you're off work to take on some of it, it makes a huge difference. So just something to keep in mind, right? We're not saying that it has to be, it has no feminist connotation to this. Like, it doesn't mean that, you know, somebody has to do a certain percentage, but just to make each other feel, even just to feel a little bit better, I think for both partners willing to share the chores, it makes a big difference in the marriage. Speaking of chores, there's another challenge that we found present in most people's marriages and relationships with kids. And that is the OCD nature of one of the partners. And I have to say, I'm very guilty of this, and Ethan can truly attest to this.
Yes.
So I have this tendency of wanting things to be done a certain way, and I really perceive the other person sometimes just doesn't do it to my standard. So I think there are two ways to overcome this in a marriage. One of them is what I learned over the years is I have to let go some of it. And I, for example, it's the dishes. Ethan is a great cook. I'm very lucky with that. And I love his food, but I never let him do dishes. I never let him clean up anything for that matter, because I just see the little imperfections that is not done the right way. And it bothers me, and I go in there and redo it. But now, I mean, years later with two kids, and I do let him do the dishes sometimes when I'm really, really busy. So that's one of the things that I let go. The second part, the second solution you can have is you can hold on to them if you absolutely have to. But what happens is, I think the language you use, or if you want the other person to do it and you want them to follow your instructions, I think the language of the communication really matters. And I think when we're tired and when we're trying to get things done, humans have this tendency of wanting to accuse each other and actually really characterize the person instead of focusing on the task and what is not done right. And I say that, I'll give you an example and you know exactly what I'm talking about. So when Ethan, let's say, puts dishes in the wrong way in the dishwasher, which is no big deal, but to me, sometimes it felt like a big deal. And instead of saying, oh, the small dishes are mixed with the big ones, so now I can't put so many dishes in the dishwasher, could you please make sure next time you do them according to the size, I would say, oh, you never do this right. You're such a disorganized person. You don't listen to me. So it becomes the the sentence starts with you. So what happens is you start to characterize the person instead of focusing on the sentence about dishes. So I think language matters, because over time, when we characterize the person, you never do things right, you never listen to me, you never do this and that. Over time, we start to see that person as the problem, and not to mention that would make the other partner really feel crappy, and the criticism will eventually really harm the relationship. But also, even you yourself would start to see that person as the problem. And when you do see, if you feel in your relationship the other person is the root of your problem, I think it's, I don't even need to say, I think everybody understands that your relationship is somewhat heading to the exit and you really need help by that time.
And I think back to one of my favorite athletes of all time, Michael Jordan. So Michael Jordan's arguably the greatest basketball player of all time. But during his early years, he actually felt like he actually needed to do everything on his own in order for his team to win. So he would always be the best scorer, the best rebounder, the best at everything, assists. And what ended up happening is he kept on losing, and he was losing to teams that really played together as a team. So what ended up happening is it actually dawned on him that you actually can't win as an individual if you play in a team sport. So that grand effort of one person cannot win in a game of many. So I think this is very similar to a relationship here. And we talked earlier about that. It really is a team. And you can't do it on your own, even if you want to try or you think you can do it. The truth of the matter is it is a team sport. And really, you both need to do well. You both need to contribute, and you both need to be able to equally play in this game in order for the family to be successful.
Absolutely. And just to expand on that, so coming back to this, to summarize, we think language is important, and you don't start the sentence with you, and you try to just focus on what the subject matter at hand. So be it dishes, and then, oh, the dishes are not sorted and I'm going to have to sort it, or the lights forgot to be turned off. Like, you don't characterize that person. But just to expand on that, and from our own way of looking at things for each of the partner, I think it's also very important not to put ourselves in a position where you see the other person always has it easier. When you have more than one child, I don't think it's ever going to be a 50-50 balanced relationship. It's just never going to happen. So whatever the family circumstance and unique situation is, one person is always going to have to do a little bit more and take on a little bit more of the childcare duties than the other. And sometimes, you know, it's even the time of your parenthood, and a number of years, maybe one person takes on more, and a number of years, maybe your roles will actually be reversed, right? Depending on who's pursuing what at what time. But the point is, it's never going to be the exact split. So if we take on a view of, oh, the other partner has it easier than me, and I'm always the one dealing with the hard stuff, I'm always the martyr, and the other person always is the one just sitting there enjoying things. And once you take on that view and that mental state, it's really going to take a toll on the relationship. So I think it's always time, from time to time, we want to remind ourselves that just appreciate what the other person's willing to do for you, and just try to appreciate the unique balance that you have and how hard you each try. Because it's like sometimes we say you fake it enough and you make it, right? Like, the language and the way you show your appreciation eventually does, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, make that balance happen.
Great. Now we're actually going to talk a little bit about as our kids get older and what that looks like.
And just when you feel like you can, your head is above water, now you can breathe, because you no longer have to worry about your children going down the stairs and and injure themselves. And, you know, going outdoor, just crossing the streets is no longer a death trap for your child. And you think, oh, now I could finally relax a little bit and you know, enjoy life a little bit. Like people say, bigger kids, bigger problems, right? You're going to have other priorities in life that get in the way of your relationship. And one of those things that I found is a lot of my friends, a lot of Ethan's friends, a lot of people we know, including myself a couple years back, is that one of the partners starts to feel really unfulfilled. And they kind of didn't like the routine or the life that they were in for whatever reason. And thinking back, I think there are a couple of reasons that contributed to it. One has actually nothing to do with kids. I think when a couple got married and you grow up together in your relationship, in life, it's inevitable that you go through different stages of a life. And it's very natural for us to be at this stage of a life that we start to reevaluate what our life's priorities are. Is my career still fulfilling to me? So this has nothing to do with kids. I believe childless couples go through the same challenge at some point. The other contributing reason I would say is really how much a person has sacrificed to the family life. And a lot of times that I find the person who takes on more childcare duties, and they probably have put their career behind, or they probably put their own hopes or dreams on hold. And now they feel like, how long can I keep on doing this? And I'm feeling miserable. I'm not feeling like I'm living my dream, or I'm really underutilized. So this is a tough period of time for couples to go through, because then, you know, the other person might feel somewhat ambushed and what can I do? And they might feel like they have no solution for this problem. So with this, I do want to share my own story. So my story is it's a little bit of a both. I think we were at our lives in maybe late 30s that our careers were in a certain way, at a certain stage, that I just started questioning things, and I really didn't feel quite fulfilled. And I was inundated with taking care of two children, managing a job, and I was tired of it. I think at one point, when I found out our son Blake had some special needs and needed some help, I was resentful of the fact that I couldn't devote myself 100% to my kids. I wanted to stay home, to be very honest. At that time, I didn't want to work anymore. I wanted to dedicate a few years just fully to my children and then figure out what I wanted to do. But I couldn't, because of our unique situation financially and otherwise, that I couldn't quit my job. So during that time, I felt very demotivated to go to work, and I just felt completely exhausted all the time and very unhappy. So what helped us go through that moment? And I have to say, that's the third picture I painted to you. Not only we were inundated with chores, I was going through my own crisis. And that really put Ethan in a very difficult position. But I have to say, I'm very grateful, and I do really appreciate, I want to thank Ethan for going through that period of time and be completely supportive of me. He didn't pressure me to come or snap out of it. He didn't force me into a solution that I didn't want to be in, nor could he change the situation where I couldn't be a stay-at-home mom, even though I wanted to. So he just basically gave me enough space and time to explore different solutions and to find myself. And whatever I wanted to do, he was there and he supported my decision. He never said, no, I don't think that's a good idea, that you shouldn't be doing this. So he supported me going to a night school. He took care of both children, which was not easy at the time. And I went to this course on creative writing once a week for 4 hours, and he supported me through that. He, you know, supported me through all the complaints of hardship, and supported me going through an application in the company I worked for a part-time position. So I wasn't able to completely stay home with my kids, but I was able to find a compromise, which was to work part-time and had a pay reduction. And not only that, when I took my son to get some coaching and some help for his special needs, and Ethan took half a day out of a week to participate in that activity, so he knew what was going on and he was able to do his part. So I have to say, as a spouse, and he was doing everything right. And you know, lo and behold, and you'll get through this like everybody else, and I did too. And eventually I realized the path of the course I had to take in life, and what role I played in the family, what role I played in my career. And I was able to come out of it and still remain positive.
So I kind of think of this like filling a bathtub. So follow me on this. So you've got three bathrooms in your house and you want to fill your bathtub. So before you actually had a family and it's just you and your spouse, you've got this one bathtub that you can fill with water as fast as you want to in order to, you know, take that shower or that bath that you longed for. But as life unfolds and you have children, in our case too, you've got three bathtubs to fill, yourselves, yours, and for your children. And if you're like me and you've ever taken a shower when others have done so as well, that water pressure slows down. So there's less water to actually fill your tub. You can't stop filling it because you can't stop helping your children with their needs. But what you can do, and as Rose mentioned, and what we've actually thought about doing, is how do we actually have a little bit less, maybe, and fill our tubs a little bit more? And it's really a working around, how do you think through what you currently have now in order to fill your bathtub while not emptying out others? One of the examples Rose mentioned was around taking time off so she can better herself, but also still being able to work. So it still helped her with her career piece, but also fulfilling her need to help Blake with his needs at that time. One of the things that we actually focused on as well is around the relationship. So as Rose had mentioned, you know, sometimes relationships, it's challenging as kids get older, they have different needs, and sometimes you actually end up losing that bit of that spark that you have in your relationship that you had formed from the very beginning. And it's really reevaluating and understanding what that looks like for you. So we actually tried a bunch of things. We tried date night one night, which actually I don't think really turned out very well, because at that time we had our kids and we were really looking forward to this evening together. We were going to go to this great restaurant, some fine dining, a little bit of wine, spend some time together, get reconnected. But that is actually the utopian view of what that date night looks like, or what the media tries to sell to you. Because the reality is that in order for us to get ready for it, we actually had to spend the whole day with our kids. We still had to attend to their needs. We still had chores and errands to run. And then when we actually got to the time where we went out, we had to make sure the babysitter arrived on time. We had to have everything pre-planned, pre-set, so our kids had that right bedtime routine, had that right schedule, and it wasn't a total disaster for them or the babysitter. And then when we're actually out having our night out, we actually ended up talking about them and being so worried about what they're going through and potentially what our babysitter is going through and whether it's going to be a nightmare and whether this babysitter will ever want to return to us. So it ended up becoming, I would say, a little bit stressful. And also, that glass of wine that we had, I think I had a little bit, but I don't remember the night at all after that, to be honest.
Yeah, just to remind you, you kind of got drunk on the first glass and we ended up sitting in a park unable to move for the rest of the night. So yay, fun for me.
That's why I remember the cold.
Yeah, so talking about the spark, it's hard to prioritize the quality time of a couple when you have children. What I would say about this is to focus on the connection and not the actual activity. A lot of us now in the social media age, that we want to look Instagram perfect. And I find people tend to, I want to go to this restaurant and I want to show this ambiance and what I wore and this dishes and stuff. That can be really great for the couple. So it really depends on the couple and what you truly like. But I found with Ethan and I, pick the activity or whatever it is that allows you to connect with each other over the picture perfect result. Restaurants didn't do it for us. What ended up happening was more fun for us was actually watching Big Bang Theory together and putting Lego sets of the Big Bang Theory together. I know we're a bit of a geeking out. But, you know, with the show of the humor and us laughing together and making fun of the characters and putting that Lego set, that's the connection for us, you know, way better than caviar and wine or whatever that is. So find what brings you together and what connects you, and not to go with the cliche or the picture perfect outward image for the couple. And, you know, also the other thing that which is a theme of our podcast, and a point that we want to make and we will make, emphasize time over time, is where kids fit in this. And my position is always going to be clear on this, is don't prioritize your kids over your relationship. I know it sounds controversial, and you know, a lot of you are probably like, what? You know, I really put my kids first. Yes, absolutely. I think that's our motherly or fatherly instinct. But if you think about it, this is really a new social phenomenon that now kids are placed ahead of everything else. Back in the days, for good or bad, couples prioritize a lot of the couple's relationship, and the kids, you know, especially with the families who had the means, were taken care of by nannies and with sometimes. So the couple's really, the parents' relationship is really the most important one in the household. There are a lot of benefits to this, even though we can't quite replicate it today in the nuclear family. But have you, I just want to ask you this question, like, just think about it. Have you ever met kids who've grown up to be adults, or even kids who are little today, who complain to say that, oh, my parents were so horrible. They were so in love with each other all the time. They didn't give me enough attention. I have never heard about kids complaining about how great their parent relationship is and how much they were in love. Never, ever. What I have heard, which is plenty, among many, many people, is that my parents, I don't know why they're still married. Their marriage obviously is not authentic or real. They don't have a connection with each other, or they argue all the time. I grew up with them fighting in the background. And then obviously there's a lot of complaints about the trauma of divorce and such. So I think what really hurts kids is when the relationship itself is inauthentic. And then also when parents truly go through a split or separation. So don't be kid-centric. Really, really prioritize your spouse whenever you can. And actually, I think that would benefit the kids, because you're showing them how to love. And you're showing them you're giving time to your spouse. And you're showing them you're investing in your relationship. And that's exactly what they need. And I want to leave one last tip for everybody, which is more of a frame of mind. I think if we all think back the passionate days when we started dating our beloved one, what were we thinking about day in and day out? What occupied our minds all the time was the other person. When you went shopping, you thought about, oh, what can I buy for him or her? When you went out to restaurants or travel, oh, I wish that person was here. I think he would like this, or she will like this. And then something happened with kids, and along the way, we stopped thinking about the other person. I don't know why that's the case. So, but be it, you know, the challenge of fulfillment for us, the challenge of connection and spark, just stop and reflect, and really truly think, where am I in the other person's life and picture? And what is my spouse's dream and hopes and their life's aspiration? And where do I fit in that? And how am I supporting them? Like, how am I contributing for them to reach their goals? Like, what part do I play helping them reach their ultimate fulfillment and life's dreams and goals? And when I asked myself this question recently, I had to pause for a second because I really didn't think I spent enough time and invested enough time to be that contributing factor. And I think all of us are in the same boat. And if it takes you long to answer this, it's really time to think about that and to act on it.
Now, you you talk a lot about Tony Robbins, and I think there's a great quote or saying that he has around don't focus on the ship in relationships. What does that mean?
Right. So I recently attended a virtual seminar Tony Robbins hosted, and he had this really good quote, and I thought that resonated with me. And he said a lot of people are very interested in the ship of the relationship other than the relation part.
Oh, ship in relationship. Got it.
You're funny. So the ship of the relationship is really, a lot of people are very focused on the idea, the ideology, how it looks, the shell of a relationship, or what a relationship is supposed to look like. So by that I mean, you know, a perfect house, an SUV, perfect family portraits, the idea of a perfect family in your social circles, how you come off and number of kids, all that stuff. So it's really how you look on the outside and what the idea of it. But truly, I believe that the true relationship between a couple is really the connection between you two and how you feel and how you are a team in navigating this family, trying everything to improve a family life, and trying to be that contributing factor to each other's life's fulfillment and goals and dreams. So it's that true piece of connection. I think we're all still young, and honestly, Ethan and I are here sharing our stories, but let's just be honest. Nobody knows what future holds, right? Nobody knows where life leads us, and it's not to say that we're going to be perfect and we're sure we're going to be together forever. Nobody in this world knows what's going to happen next year, 10 years from now. But I think what's important is that you're connected, or you're trying your best to be connected to each other now, and you really give each other's hearts at this moment and be authentic. It's about being present, and it's about giving each other the gift of this moment of your life, and I think they deserve it.
And that concludes today's podcast. So with that, I actually want to thank you for allowing us to be part of your day. Have a great one. Bye.